Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 4, Sati quits her body, Text 7. Tamagatam tatrana kaschanadriyat. Vimanitam yajnakrito bhayanjanah. Rite swasri vai jananim cha sadarah. Rite swasri vai jananim cha sadarah. Premashru kanthya parishasrajur muda. Tamagatam tatra na kaschanadriyat. Vimanitam yajnakrito bhayanjanah. Rite swasrir vai jananim cha sadarah. Premashru kanthya parishashvas parishasrajurmuda.
Tamagatam tatra na kaschanadriyat.
Vimanitam yajnakrito bhayajanah.
Rite
swasrir vai jananim cha sadarah. Premashru kanthya parishasvajurmuda.
Word by word translation. Tam, her, sati, agatam, having arrived, tatra, there, na, not, kaschana, anyone, adriyat, received, vimanitam, not receiving respect, yajna kritaha, of the performer of the sacrifice, daksha, bhayat, from fear, janaha, person, rite, except, swastrihi, her own sisters, vai, indeed, jananim, mother, cha, and, sa adaraha, with respect, prema ashru kanthyah, whose throats were filled with tears of affection. Parishas Swajuhu, embraced, Muda, with glad faces. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila Abhay Charanaravinda Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. When Sati with her followers reached the arena, because all the people assembled were afraid of Daksha, none of them received her well. No one welcomed her but her mother and sisters, who, with tears in their eyes and with glad faces, welcomed her and talked with her very pleasingly. Purport. The mother and sisters of Sati could not follow the others, who did not receive Sati very well. Due to natural affection, they immediately embraced her with tears in their eyes and with loving feelings. This shows that women as a class are very soft-hearted. Their natural affection and love cannot be checked by artificial means. Although the men present were very learned brahmanas and demigods, they were afraid of their superior Daksha. And because they knew that their welcoming Sati would displease him, although in their minds they wanted to receive her, they could not do so. Women are naturally soft-hearted, but men are sometimes very hard-hearted.
Om Agyanatimi Randhasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namah. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Here in this verse is the word prem, which we in the sampradaya from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, we're very familiar with this word. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, Krishna Vishayak prem param purusharta. It's the ultimate goal of life is prem, love, but specifically Krishna Vishayak prem. Prem, love in relation to Krishna. Those of us who are coming from non-Indian backgrounds, we didn't grow up with speaking Indian languages, we mostly only know this word prem in relation to the spiritual love that we wish to reawaken. Nitya Siddha Krishna Prem. Sadha kabunai shravanadi shuddha chitte kareya udai. That natural love which is within the heart of every living being for Krishna, which is to be awakened, reawakened by the process of hearing, chanting, etc. about Krishna. But as with the English word love, it can be used for material love also, as in this verse here. The love between the women folk, the affection, the love that they had for Sati, who was related to them as sister, sister-in-law, daughter, daughter-in-law, friend, and so on. But particularly said here, mother and sisters. Of course, sister has a strict biological meaning, but it's often used for female, among females, for other female friends who they feel very close to. It's used in modern Indian languages also. To address pretty much any woman of the same age as the person speaking it. We have in Bengali Didi, in Hindi Ben, but Srila Prabhupada said that's not correct. Women are to be addressed as mother, not as sister. It's a different kind of relation. Here in this purport, we hear about qualities of women. Women are naturally soft-hearted. Just prior to this, we heard how women's weakness leads to divorce. In a purport just prior to this, we heard about womanly weakness. So there are pros and cons. In the nature of men and women, elsewhere in the Bhagavatam, we have Kashyap Muni speaking in relation to the behavior of his wife, or one of his wives, Diti, that women, they appear to be very soft-hearted and affectionate outside, but inside their hearts are as sharp as razors. So there you go. You have different assessments. So different statements may apply to different people, to different women. Although, generally speaking, it's a generalization that women are naturally soft-hearted. But it's not always true. They may start off soft-hearted and become hard-hearted. There's one famous Indian woman. What was her name from Chambal? Phulan Devi. She started off as a tribal woman, wife, and then when her, because from that area, the Chambal area, is famous since time immemorial for dacoity, robbing, looting, killing. So when her husband was killed for engaging in his caste occupation, she took up a gun herself and became famous as a terror, for she killed so many people, police and this and that, and she herself led a gang. And then she reformed and became a member of parliament. And then she died a few years ago. So she wasn't feeling very soft-hearted and affectionate when she was going out and killing people. You don't usually expect women to lead up gangs. Although things can change. It can be a matter of acculturation also. Maybe about 15 or 20 years ago, I just recently come back from the West, from England, and I met some devotees from America, from Detroit to be precise. Which those of you who are from America know that Detroit is famous as one of the great crime cities of America. Maybe they all are. I mean, even in Atlanta, pretty much every day there's some homicide by shooting. It's not big news. But Detroit, Chicago has a long-standing tradition, and pretty much it's everywhere. But I said to them that things are getting so bad in the West. I just read, and just on the plane when I was coming out of England, that in some rural town, I remember Henley-on-Thames, that's for those who are from England, which means no one here except me, they know that that's like the epitome of a placid, quaint, old English town, small town, somewhere out in the middle of nowhere. So in Henley-on-Thames, a girl gang had tortured a young man to death. They tortured him and then threw him off the bridge into the River Thames. So he died in the unholy River Thames. I was saying, yeah, things are getting so bad. And said, well, we're from Detroit, that thing, kind of things. We grew up with that. That's just not girl gangs. Girl gangs? Girl girls making gangs and killing people? Did it start yet in Czech Republic? Didn't start yet. Don't talk about it too much. Don't give them the idea. So it's not that all women are naturally soft-hearted. It's probably a lot to do with acculturation, which is what certain insane people who have become very prominent in society at the present time say, that there's no... gender is just a cultural construct, and therefore you should raise boys and girls the same. Don't tell you're a boy and therefore you have to play with guns, toy guns, and be tough like a boy. As I heard when I was growing up, boys don't cry. You heard that when you're growing up? That's for girls. Little girls cry. Boys don't cry. Sugar and spice and all things nice, that's what little girls are made of. Sticks and stones and pussycat bones, that's what little boys are made of. Nursery rhyme for your transcendental consideration. But it's making a point that boys are supposed to be tough and rough, and they were trained for that because they had to do the tough, rough work, right? And women are supposed to be nice and charming and this and that. Although they have to do a lot of tough and rough work. Also, just like the women here, which you hire, they come and they work in the fields, they work on construction and everything. So the idea, you raise boys and girls to be the same, and then about by about the age of 3 and a half, they can decide whether they want to be a boy and a girl, and if they're in a boy's body, they can have a sex change procedures and become a girl. It's insane. I mean, even many of the beef-eating karmis can understand it's insane. It's evil. There is a difference between male and female bodies, and there is a difference between the psychology of them, but acculturation should be according to that. Not to try to... Having a hard time translating all of this? You doing okay? I don't know if they have even words for all these kind of things. In so many languages. Just like in Sanskrit, there's no word for divorce, marital divorce. So they had to make up a word, vivaha vichhed, and the normal word used in Hindi is talak, which is an Urdu word coming from Islamic culture, where divorce is institutionalized. Now, why are we discussing all these things? Because we're sitting in this remote farm with an aim to demonstrate what? Vedic culture? Let's begin with human culture. As I believe Srila Prabhupada quoted that when Mahatma Gandhi, having been to England, he was asked, what do you think of Western culture? And he said, it would be a good idea. Means they don't have any culture. It would be a good idea if they got some culture. Because actually the Sanskrit word which is translated as culture is Sanskriti, which means there are sanskars. It's meant for purification. But in the Western world, what's the culture meant for? It's up for grabs. Anyone can just come in and say what they like and just change it. And they have done it. They've changed. The culture's changed dramatically. Just like, for instance, the word gay, which used to be a standard English word for a certain kind of happy lightheartedness. Now the meaning has been totally appropriated to mean homosexuals, especially male homosexuals. the attitudes have changed. It's social engineering to change the culture. It's going on. That shouldn't happen in Vedic culture because of the parampara system. It should be passed down the same thing as previously. In the Western world, or the non-Vedic culture, there's always the idea of something new. Something new is always better. They have the idea we were all primitive savages running around, and then we became advanced, and we're making progress, and things are getting better and better, and we're getting our ideas better and better, so our society is getting better. New is always good. You should always change everything. Karl Marx even directly said that. He said there should be one revolution after another. Because he said you have to institute communism, make everyone equal, and then someone will exploit it, the situation, and become more prominent and exploitive. So you have to have one revolution after ongoing revolution. The Vedic system of, which means constant turmoil. The Vedic culture addresses the same problem of exploitation by an intelligent system, very intelligent system, given by the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself, Chatur Varnyam Maya Srishtam. And it is aimed at regulating that tendency to exploit others and at purifying that tendency to exploit others. It doesn't say, well, human... In Christianity also, they have this idea that man is sinful. You can't get free from being sinful, so you just have to believe in Jesus who takes away all your sins. But you can't stop being sinful. That's actually their theology, mainstream Christian theology. Jesus said something to the effect that, be like me. Srila Prabhupada also said, you should try to... there's some people tried for that. One of the great mystic Christian saints, Thomas a Kempis, his famous book, The Imitation of Christ. In other words, you have to try to be like Christ. It was when I stopped reading all stupid Kami books before I came to this movement. That was one of the few books I kept to read, because it's a very spiritual aspiration. But we're trying to institute here Vedic culture, which the beginning of it is human culture, because aharanidra bhayamaitunam cha samanyam etat parshubhyanaranam. Humans and animals both eat, sleep, mate, and defend. So without dharma, dharmenehina pashubhya naranam, without dharma, a human is only an animal. Well, a decorated, sophisticated animal. So materialistic culture can't go beyond the animalistic propensities. This verse from Hitopadesh, ahara nidra bhayamaitunam cha, Srila Prabhupada rendered it. He didn't often say the last part of the verse, but the last part of the verse is usually rendered dharmo hitesham adhiko visheisham dharmena hina pashubhya naranam. The special prerogative in human life is the practice of dharma, failing to utilize which, a human is simply an animal. Sometimes an alternative reading of this verse is gyano hitesham adhiko visesham gyanena hina pashubhya naranam. That without knowledge is the special prerogative of human life, lacking which a human is just an animal. And as often in Shastra, especially in the Vedanta, well, in the darshans, Vedanta, Yoga, Sankhya, Jnana specifically means spiritual knowledge. It can mean knowledge of everything, of anything. It can mean knowledge of how to cheat and steal. That's also one kind of knowledge. But Jnana is in the Vedantic literature, and in all the darshans, that's in most of the darshans, that's used to mean knowledge of our situation, sambandha gyan, which is differently understood in different darshans, different knowledge systems or philosophies. But that is the root of dharma. Of course, Bhagavan himself is said to be the root of dharma, but let's say a different word, basis. Dharma is based on knowledge that we are not this body, that we are eternal spiritual beings who are meant to serve Krishna in the spiritual world, and we have to act in this life in such a way to revive that consciousness. Or even if there's not knowledge of specific knowledge of our relationship with Krishna, there is minimally in Vedic culture knowledge that human life is meant for spiritual cultivation because we are intrinsically spiritual beings, not material beings. We're not meant for enjoying this world. We don't have any real relationship with this world at all. So what is the nature of we? All Vedantic traditions agree. Well, there are two basic traditions. One is personalistic and the other is impersonalistic. So they all accept that the Atma is Atma Gyan. Gyan means Atma Gyan. We are by nature Atma. So what is the nature of Atma? There's a huge difference of perspective or understanding between the impersonalists and the personalists. And what is the nature of the material world? The nature of the material world, according to followers of the Shankara school, it doesn't have a nature. It's just completely illusory. Completely illusory, according to them. So we don't really have a relationship with it at all. So getting back to the topic here of Sati with her followers. With her followers. Actually, they're followers of Shiva, but she's half the body of Shiva. So it can also be said, her followers. She's arrived at the sacrifice and the arena of the sacrifice, and she's getting the kind of treatment from most of the people there that Shiva had foreseen and had therefore not wanted her to go. And that's bad. There are worse things to come. What are we to understand from all of this? Well, as we're discussing dharma, we can see that there is a proper way to behave and an improper way to behave. Daksha, when he insulted Shiva, thought that he was speaking from the platform of dharma. Ordinarily, if someone doesn't stand up as a matter of respect when their father-in-law enters, that's a great insult. And Daksha was pointing that out. Ordinarily, of course, not very ordinary that people do that, but if someone is covered with ashes from the crematorium, that would be considered to be a sign of the deep mode of ignorance. To have snakes on your body, Shashi Bhushan, one of the names of Lord Shiva. He's decorated with snakes. His hair is all matted, which looks mode of ignorance type. So ordinarily what Daksha said would be correct, but he didn't know the glories of Lord Shiva. He may have probably heard them, otherwise why would he allow his daughter to marry Shiva anyway? But he became overcome with the kind of pride and egoism that often go with high position when people are respecting you so much. So he committed adharma, although he thought, I'm speaking, that he said, listen to me, everyone. I speak not out of egoism, but from the platform of dharma. In other words, he was indirectly saying that I am speaking out of egoism. Otherwise, he wouldn't have had to say, I'm not speaking out of egoism. What about the other members of the assembly who also wanted to welcome Sati, but didn't do so out of fear of Daksha? They may have justified in their own minds that, well, Daksha's a great personality, we shouldn't go against him. It's his own family affair. So if he has some bad feeling toward his daughter, well, that's between the two of them, not for us to get involved. But they also became implicated, as we will see. The terrible results. They could have members of the assembly there, brahmanas. They could have said to Daksha, they could have quietly had a word to him, well, after all, it's your daughter. You had so... She was... particularly, it's mentioned here that in this section of Bhagavatam, in one of the purports, I believe, as Shiva addresses his wife as Dakshayani, that pointing out that she, among all the daughters of Daksha, was especially dear to him. She was a pet daughter. But that had changed completely. So someone could have said that, well, after all, you do love your daughter, don't you? So why don't you be kind to her? You could have, but they didn't, out of fear, and they all became implicated. It can be difficult to know what to do in various situations. For some reason or other, when I was very new in this Krishna consciousness movement, before I was initiated, I was initiated after only 5 months, I was made the treasurer for Bhaktivedanta Manor. Now, of course, nowadays it's they have millions of pounds turnover every year. But in those days, it was a struggle financially, but it was really a struggle. So I was made the treasurer. I still can't understand why. One of the main jobs was telling all the women coming, wanting things for their babies, no. Pretty tough job. And they had to say no because there was no money. Very, very little money. When I first went to Bhaktivedanta, it was snowing outside and there was no heating inside. You couldn't afford it. Everyone walk around indoors with full, heavy clothing, as if they were outside in the snow. So why am I relating this? From a very early times in my tenure in this movement, I got to see how managers, they have to do things which are not going to be liked by everyone. And they're going to come under criticism. I remember reading in those early days in the Bhagavatam, in one purport, Srila Prabhupada says that people who are trying to act for the good of others are generally criticized by them, the leaders of society. So you have to make decisions. Someone has to make some decision. Or if you don't make a decision, then people from outside your group will make the decision to exploit you for your weakness. You have to take a course of action. Not everyone's going to like it. And you can't always sit down with everyone and spend 5 hours explaining to them why you chose the color yellow instead of the color red for painting a room, for instance. Well, I think it should have been painted in red. For instance, and this may sound like a foolish example, but there are such things and there are such people who will argue left, back, right, this way, that way, that way, over every little thing. And you have to decide what to do. Daksha made his decision. He thought he was invincible. He wasn't. He had to suffer the reaction. Severely suffer the reaction. So there's an example of a leader making a very bad decision. And the followers also got implicated. Daksha more than anyone else. Srila Prabhupada warned in the middle of one lecture that the GBC members should be careful, otherwise Yamaraj will punish them. That's a favorite quote of certain members or ex-members of ISKCON, and one which don't find the GBC themselves quoting very much, if at all. But it's right there, you can't get rid of it, even if you might want to. Of course, that's not the only thing that Prabhupada said about the GBC. So, people may take decisions in different ways. There are so many books and courses on leadership. One of the main factors in leadership is decision making. You might think from all the self-help books and seminars out there that it's all about being nice with people, but it comes down to making decisions. Decisions should be made on the basis of dharma, not on the basis of sentiment. Here, Satis, sisters, and mother welcomed her due to their sentiment, and others didn't due to their different kind of sentiment. But neither we thought, is it proper to do so or not, due to dharma. Better they should have thought in terms of dharma. How should we act in this situation? Well, maybe they did, but it's not mentioned here. Dharma, the codes of dharma are meant to regulate everything in human society, but it cannot regulate everything in human society. Does that sound foolish to say that? The codes of dharma are meant to regulate everything in human society, but they cannot regulate everything in human society because human society is so unpredictable and there are all kinds of things that can happen which we've never thought of. There are all kinds of precedents that we can look to. In Shastra, you should follow your guru. Yeah, but not always, because there are precedents for rejecting your guru also. Even the great Bhishma, the great exemplar of dharma, he rejected his guru. Bali Maharaj became famous and worshipable for rejecting his worshipable guru, who had done so much for him. Shukracharya wasn't just a formal kind of guru, but he rocketed Bali from being king of the netherworlds to king of the whole universe. And Bali disobeyed him, even though Shukra gave very good reasoning from the demoniac point of view. Even he offered dharmic, he quotes from Shastra, that you can go against your own word, you can lie. There are certain situations where you can lie. He quoted from Shastra, to protect your own interests, which Shukra saw, this was Bali's best interest. So it can be very hard what to do, and especially you don't always have the luxury of sitting down and thinking what to do. You have to make decisions on the spot. You're in the boat, and then it gets some leak, and it's leaking quickly, and you're going to have to throw someone over the side. Who's it going to be? You don't have time to have a big discussion over dharma, who's the best one to do. But someone has to go quickly. Usually in that case, it would be a case of might makes right. But not necessarily. You might keep the children, or you might not. You might not keep the children because they can't help to row the boat. You have to make a decision on the spot. And then when you get to the shore, you may be arrested for murder. You have to make some decision. It's a very difficult world. It's very hard to know. Therefore, Savadhaman Paritya Mamekam Sharanam Raja Hang Twa Sarva Pabhebhyo Moksha Yishyami Mashucha. Krishna tells Arjuna, you can't avoid doing something. If you want to avoid doing something wrong, you can't. Because sava rambahi doshena, in everything you do, there's going to be some kind of fault. So just surrender to me, and I'll deliver you from all sinful reactions. That doesn't give a license to devotees to act in a sinful way. They should be exemplars of dharma. But again, we should know what dharma is. Arjuna thought he knew, and he gave a very good arguments for not fighting based on dharma, and very good arguments, but they were good arguments, but they weren't valid because Krishna had another perspective, which is from a higher platform of dharma. That's from the platform of adhyatma, the spiritual, fully spiritual perspective. So what is spiritual? What is pleasing to Krishna? The ultimate dharma is anukulyasya sankalpa pratikulyasya varjanam, to act in a way for individual behavior, to act in a way that is pleasing to Krishna, and to reject any kind of behavior that is displeasing to Krishna. Generally, that will be in accord with worldly dharma, but not always. People who follow worldly dharma, they do many of the same things as people who are pursuing the spiritual dharma of surrendering to Krishna. For instance, rising early in the morning and bathing and engaging in some spiritual activities early in the morning. Materialistic dharmic people do this also. They'll chant verses from Shastra. Maybe the same verses as the spiritualists do. Vaishnavas and non-Vaishnava, smarta brahmanas, in this area of India, up to the present time, many of them still chant Vishnu Sahasranam daily. Although it went down a lot when there was a cassette released with Lakshmi Subramaniam chanting, and then in the houses they had her chant it instead of you doing it yourself personally. That was 30 years ago. But they both do it, but they have a different outlook. The Vaishnava Brahmanas, of whom there are traditionally many in this area, this particular area of India, maybe not exactly this tribal part, but when if you go Srikakulam side, and then there's Kurmakshetra, and all the way down, there are many Vaishnava Brahmanas. They would daily chant Vishnu Sahasranam. And there are many smarter Brahmins who also chant, but they have a different outlook, a different understanding. They follow basically the same dharma, basically the same culture, and they both accept that adhyatma, the spiritual goal, is ultimate, But they have a very different understanding of what that spiritual goal is. And actually, smartas, they're mostly very materialistic, because they accept that the ultimate goal is moksha, which in their understanding is impersonal realization. But they think, well, we're a long way from that. So we should act according to our position at the present time. Shrayan svadharma viguna. Don't give up your own dharma. So we have to act for dharma and artha, making money, and kama, sense gratification, not gross sinful sense gratification, according to dharma, but very interested in this. So it can be difficult to understand the difference between the differences and the similarities between dharma, that which are religious activities, and adhyatma, those which are spiritual activities. This dichotomy is popular in America, among younger people especially, to say, I'm spiritual but I'm not religious. But they have no idea what it means to be either spiritual or religious. Spiritual means adhyatma, adhyatmikta. And religious means dharma. So the two coalesce, but unless there's a proper understanding of what is adhyatma, then dharma can be completely mundane and one can remain in the material world forever. Even this discussion here, this whole big section about the insulting of Shiva and then the destruction of the sacrifice by the followers of Shiva, wonder why is that in Bhagavatam at all? Maybe there's some lesson about dharma there. You shouldn't insult a great person, but dharma projita kaitava atra, from the very beginning of Bhagavatam, mundane dharmic principles are rejected. So what's this story doing in there at all? Where's the Krishna consciousness in this story? That we can understand, this exemplifies the principle which is spoken by, who's that spoken? Is this in relation to Kamsa, that the, what is that? Ayu Shriya Yasha Dharma. What's that verse? That all the lifespan, the opulence, the reputation, everything is diminished if one does mahada tikrama, if one insults great personalities. It's an important verse. We should learn that one, actually. Particularly, Lord, that's true even on the material platform. But what more to say of Lord Shiva, who's a great Vaishnava? So we can understand it in this respect. Otherwise, there's nothing mundane in Srimad Bhagavatam. Although even for how to live in this world, we can glean so many lessons from it. This topic of distinguishing, Damodar Prabhu, this topic of distinguishing between dharma and adhyatma, what is adhyatmic dharma, what is bhautik dharma, that's an important topic. You can make a note. If it's not already analyzed in our upcoming book, that should be analyzed in some detail. The essence is very simple. The essence is Krishnarte Akila Cheshta. Everything is done by devotees for the satisfaction of Krishna. That makes it spiritual. Krishnaizes everything. And then you may ask, Hare Krishna. Okay, that's a sign. No. And say the sign to finish. Then it may be asked, well, what about the activities of Mayavadis? I'm talking about real Mayavadis who really follow Dharma, and there are such persons up to the present time. The disciplic followers of Shankaracharya, the sannyasis. I saw one of them in Puri just now. I saw him means I saw him live on the TV screen. He was just maybe 100 meters away, but in the crowds I couldn't see. So they were having the annual worship of Mahodadhi, the sea at Puri. So he was there doing that, and that's why we came late for the first drama, because we were caught in the traffic jam. So I thought I'd just get out and have a look and see what the big crowds there. He was overseeing this, worshipping the sea, which is, the sea is the repository of all the great rivers. That the sea on the eastern side of India, called the Mahodadhi, is the repository and the husband of Ganga and Krishna River, Godavari, and these are the three main rivers. And then there's the Kaveri, then Tungabhadra, and down in Tirunelveli, Tamraparni. Yeah. So the sea on that side is the husband. And on the other side, you have the Ratnakara, into which flow the west flowing rivers, which are not so many. One of them, Narmada is the biggest. Sindhu, the Sindhu River, used to be Sarasvati. And there are many small rivers which are very wide, but they're very short, which come up in Kerala and south. That Sahyadri Hills, that in Mangalore side you have the Netravati and the other rivers like that. And this, the southern point of India is Kanyakumari, but in Vedic Bhugol or geography, it's Rameshwaram. Why is that? It's not the fully southern tip. Because the two seas meet there. And if you go to the edge, the Setu Bandha, the edge, the very edge, you can see the two seas come together. So that's got nothing to do with the class whatsoever. But anyway, Hare Krishna. All glories to His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.